From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in Rochester South Wedge on December 31st. That's when a popular local beer bar and pub will close its doors for good. Tap and Mallet is known for its craft beers, its cauliflower wings, a popular site for many first dates. If there were a Cheers in Rochester, it might as well be Tap and Mallet, with co-owner Joe McBain as our Sam Malone. Earlier this week, the pub announced it is closing on a Facebook post that read in part, quote, "It is with a heavy heart that we have decided to call time on what has been a truly amazing 14 years. The pub has allowed a great many people to share great moments, provided comfort in tough times, hosted many first dates, been the site of proposals and even a few weddings over the years, always accompanied by the very best beer and tasty food. It has truly exceeded everything that we hoped it could be. When the pandemic hit, it came at a tough time as the pub was already feeling the effects of changes in the craft beer industry that we all continue to enjoy. We all soldiered on, but have reached the tough decision that it's time to call last orders," end quote. The business has had to evolve over the years. As the DNC's Will Cleveland reported, when TAP was founded in 2007, it quickly became the epicenter of Rochester's fledgling craft beer scene. But as that scene grew and changed, so did the TAP, shifting to more of a dining space rather than just a drinking one. And as Joe McBain will tell us, some of the clientele changed as well, and challenges became even greater during the pandemic. Tap and Mallet struggles are not unique. Just this morning, the owner of Unter Beer Garden in the East End announced his establishment will close due to pandemic challenges. Unter's last day is December 12th. But this hour, we focus on Tap and Mallet's story, how it helped develop Rochester's craft beer scene, how it navigated industry and pandemic challenges, and what the pub has meant to loyal customers. And I'd like to welcome our guest, Joe McBain. Didn't think the next time I saw you would be talking about this, Joe.
How are you, Evan?
How are you?
You know, I'm okay. It's definitely a week of reflection, and it's been heartwarming to
pretty gratifying to hear the outpouring, huh?
You know, it's just been amazing to read all these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of comments on that one particular post of people who have just had incredible experiences over the years at this, you know, pub that we created, you know.
Well, we're going to be talking about that impact. And Jamie Barclay is here, a Tap and Mallet customer. And, we're going to talk about some of the personal connections here. Jamie, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Dan Giroux is on the line with us, also a longtime Tap customer, has done many shifts as well there, has slung some beer there, and maybe even found love there. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Evan. How are you?
Good, man. Hey, how are you taking this news, Dan?
Still processing.
That's fair enough. Jamie?
Same. It's been quite a week, you know, to Joe's point, that really thinking about my life and how it has unfolded there, what relationships I've met, made there, and how those have developed, and my friendship with Joe and Casey and all of that, and like what's come out of that space and what they wanted it to be and what it was to so many of us and what it was to me, right? And what really, really taking time to reflect on that. Is the space I'm in, and not so much anything else. It's just appreciating it for the next 30 days.
Well, and that appreciation is interesting because Joe McBain said something interesting to Will Cleveland of the DNC. You said this has been a little bit like reading the comments of your own obituary. We don't usually get that chance, Joe, so at least that's probably been kind of interesting for you to hear what people might say if you're gone. You're not gone, even if Tap's going to be gone.
Right, and they were quite kind, so...
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't please everybody, but that's pretty good when what you've created has this sort of an impact. I'd like to start by just kind of going back to the beginning here. Set the scene for me of how TAP came to be in 2007, right?
Yep. It was November 2nd of 2007 was the day we threw the doors open. And, you know, prior to that, I'd arrived in the country in 2000 from Sheffield, and I was a student there, and ended up at the Old Toad, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of and been to over the years. And you know, I'd worked in pubs as well, you know, in the UK, and so 7 years at the Old Toad, and you know, really immersed myself in, you know, beer and pub culture, and you know, got to know a lot of people, including my partner Casey, who at the time owned a restaurant, Mex, a few doors down the street in Alexander. And, You know, I was really passionate about, you know, yeah, beer and pubs, and I had this vision that we could you know, create this amazing world class beer bar. You know, because I, you know, I traveled a fair bit, and you know, I'd seen a lot of places that I really admired, and I had some ideas in my head of how I would do it, and we were fortunate that we ended up getting the old McGregor's location that's now Tap and Mallet there in the Wedge, and it was, you know, it was perfect. You know, we worked for about 6 months, you know, build the bar and all kinds of other things to make it what it is, and off we went.
Well, you, as you know, many restaurants, many bars don't last a year. Many don't last 2 years or five. Many aren't profitable for a long time, if ever. Was there a moment where you said, all right, we are not going to fold. This is going to work.
Yeah, it was about 30 minutes before we opened on the first day. that was wild, actually, because we had lines of people in the street before we opened. We opened at... I think it was 3 or 4 o'clock on that day, and it just flooded in, and we were completely overwhelmed and frankly underprepared, and we muddled our way through that first night, and the second day was much smoother. but no, it was an instant hit, and I think with, you know, with any business, you know, you try and present something where there's a need, there's a want for that, and you know, at that particular time there was tons of people that really wanted this, you know, specialized beer bar, and then they came in and it was a lot more than that. You know, it was a great place to meet and hang out, and you know, the food was good, and yeah, it was a lot more than beer, but beer was absolutely it's kind of like you know, it's access and what we really were known for. But yeah, immediately people flocked in, and they attached themselves to what we were doing, and we went from there, and it's evolved and grown, but we never really changed what we set out to do, which was just be an awesome place to hang out for people with, you know, the best beer available and great pub food.
Or, you know, that was at a time. I think it's very fair to say, and this is where Dan and Jamie will have time this hour to kind of fill us in where they are on this, but certainly 2007, 2008 was nascent stages of a beer culture compared to now. Fair enough, Joe?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and so did you in those early years, did you have customers who would come in, and there's, by the way, we're not denigrating anybody's like of anything. You can drink what you want, like what you want, it's all good. But did you have people come in and say, have Bud Light, and did you say, hey, how about something different? Let me steer you in this direction. Were you educating people, or did you primarily have a clientele that was ready for something different and were looking to you to give it to you?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, both. So, you know, oftentimes you'd have a, you know, a large group of people that had come in together, you know, friends, and the reason they were there was, you know, some or most of the people in that group were really excited to try all these different beer options. But there'd be other people in the group that just happened to be friends with them and liked a Bud Light. And we never did carry, you know, Bud Light or, you know, Blue Light. You know, we always, you know, sold independent, you know,
yeah,
breweries. But I was always very clear with anyone that worked there, just because from my travels, I've definitely been to a lot of, like, you know, really well-regarded beer bars, but they're frankly kind of elitist and a bit, you know, a bit snobby, and it is just beer, you know, and I was always very clear about that, you know, like, It's about people hanging out and having a beer, and that's more important than the beer itself. However, we do happen to have really good beer, so, and we always have options. So if you want a Bud Light, well, we don't have that, but there's a multitude of other things that they're not worlds apart, and we're always very proactive about have a free sample, you know, a non-commitment, you know, try this, try that, and a lot of people got turned on to different things, I think, because of that sort of unpretentious approach.
Did you have to police any snobbery over the years?
No, not too much. Not too much. I mean, there's lots of you know, discussions and tastings and, you know, education that's gone on down there. But I do think we always managed to maintain a level of just kind of, you know, relaxed enjoyment.
Jamie, let me ask you and Dan. I'll start with you on this. How do you see the beer culture's evolution? Take us back to maybe those early days compared to now.
So, I mean, to say that the beer scene in Rochester was birthed out of Tap and Mallet is the absolute truth. I remember sitting there and talking to Joe and Matt Hartman and some really old, you know, folks in beer and saying, like, what could this city be like? What could we create this beer community into, and dreaming and visioning, and how do we do this? And those conversations happened at the bar, right? At Tap and Mallet, created this culture. You know, Rochester Real Beer Week was just an idea for I don't know how many years before it became a thing, right? The Rochester Real Beer Expo, all of these things were ideas. Breweries were evolved from there. You know, I remember sitting at the bar and talking with Leslie and Eric, Leslie Zink Ward and Eric, and, you know, hearing about their vision for Love and Cup. You know, that happened at the bar, you know, at the pub. And, like, to think about what Rochester would be like if we didn't have that time together 14 years ago is just unfathomable.
How do you see it, Dan?
The beer culture in Rochester and in general, we're in a midst of some crazy changes. But to echo what Jamie said, as far as, you know, Tap and Mallet's importance and whatnot, I think about my previous time there 7 years ago, and, you know, how some of my regulars there ended up being head brewers at local spots here, such as Derek Armstrong over at Three Heads and Justin down at Swiftwater. So, like, there's this whole community that sort of grows up together and, you know, continues to have their influence throughout the region, throughout beer. So it's been a fun time there.
And you know, so Joe, this is, I think, a surprise to people who maybe a year ago were really concerned. I mean, we've all been concerned for small business all throughout this pandemic. But a year ago, there was a lot of talk that, you know, we weren't going to see a lot of small businesses survive this pandemic. And you fast forward to the end of 2021 here, and I think there was a lot of hope that we could get to the other side of this thing, that things were changing. What was 2019 like for TAP? Before the pandemic, how were things going at TAP?
Great.
And was that like a best year ever for you? Were you in a good position? Were things changing?
You know, that year and the, you know, few years previous had all been good years. You know, and pretty like stable. No real growth or, you know, decline.
But just, you were at a comfortable place?
Oh, yeah. It was good. And, I mean, business had changed. You know, we were definitely selling a larger amount of, like, proportionally food than drinks. And we can talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the reasons why. But, you know, we've got a great kitchen crew down there, and people really flock to our, you know, food. We have a kind of unique way of doing pub food, which a lot of people like, and particularly, you know, the vegetarian and vegan stuff, you know, was always...
I already have an email from a listener who's thanking you
super
for the
popular,
vegan stuff.
And, you know, yeah. We really kind of got into that. They were good years. Everything was good, you know. People drink beer now a bit more in brewery tap rooms, and then, you know, the pandemic happens, and then people sort of get in the habit, you know, that they're getting beer to go from places.
Let me stop you for 1 second, because I want to put a point on this. I think what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is even before the pandemic, there was a shift going on where breweries themselves were opening their own tap rooms and places to drink. So they weren't just providing beer to bars like yours. They were creating their own spaces.
Yeah, New York State relaxed the way that they manage these small breweries to allow them to have tap rooms, you know, and people love to drink in breweries. I love to drink in breweries, and I couldn't be more excited about the local brewing scene that we have, because it's, you know, it's really, it's blossomed. There's a lot, and there's a lot of really good quality stuff, and it's exciting, and people like to explore that, and they're people that I absolutely always appeal to, you know. People like good beer, you know, and count me in with that, you know.
Yeah, and so, Dan, what do you make of this trend that, you know, if you go back to the beginning of Tap and Mallet's history, they almost had the market cornered for this, and then you see not only more bars open, you know, the Love and Cups, the great stuff that's happening. And it's not just Tap and Mallet. I mean, it's a great scene that's happening. Then you've got more breweries opening, and then they're opening their own spaces. Is that just sort of a natural and healthy outgrowth of all of this, Dan?
I mean, it's definitely natural. How do you differentiate yourself is really the big point in this conversation when you have spaces making their stuff, you know, down the street, around the corner, where people want to drink it fresh.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie, do you see sort of the market naturally finding its own saturation point? I mean, are we close to that? How do you see the market right now, Jamie?
So I don't really know how to answer that. I've been thinking a lot about that, right? So there was what was happening in 2019, and we were seeing it, right? That in 2019, Dan and I were living and working and being in the scene in New York City, and we were starting to see some of these changes happening in 2019 and early 2020 in mm-hmm. New York City, right? What Joe was talking about, places being more focused on food and people wanting to shift and be more into the brewery space and really going right to the source. And then the pandemic hit, right? And then it changed everything for everybody. And so now that people are, we're thinking about this new normal or whatever it is, right? I think there was a natural evolution that was already happening. And then the pandemic threw like a curveball that nobody knew. And now there's going to be something new that maybe we get to create, right? Like, so thinking back about 2000, you know, those early days, 2009 or whatever it was, and sitting around and imagining what we have now, maybe that's where we're at. I think that we're not going to go back to whatever it was in 2019. There was already this shift happening.
Yeah.
And then now, what's next?
Sure. But even still, it wasn't like in 2019, the tap had gone from being Man United to Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, it wasn't, you know, some sort of bottom feeder.
No.
Where are you from? Are you from Sheffield?
Yeah, I'm not. Definitely not a Sheffield United fan.
Wasn't it Wednesday when I was growing up? I just wanted to take a shot at your heritage.
No,
who do you
Wednesday.
Support?
Well, listen, I'm wearing it on my shirt today. You'll never walk alone. Liverpool Football Club. Till I die.
Liverpool.
Yeah, they're playing at 3:15 today, so I got to skedaddle out of there and go catch that game.
But why, if you're from Sheffield, why are you not a Wednesday fan?
Well, I lived in Liverpool till I was six.
Okay.
And of the two,
so you're not a total sellout.
No. I did live in Liverpool, and of the two Sheffield teams, I went to see a lot of Wednesday games over the years. So definitely Wednesday, not United.
Okay. See, and here there's this interesting. If you don't know this, there's an interesting scene in Rochester where if you're an Arsenal fan, if you're an Everton fan, if you're a Liverpool fan, you've got your bars that you can watch games in.
Oh yeah, it's great. There's nothing better than going out with a crowd of like-minded fans and enjoying a game.
We're getting very just irrationally angry at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What was tap? What was tap? Was tap the home to any of that stuff?
You know, well, we didn't have any TVs, so there was no regularity down there.
You never thought about making it a Liverpool bar?
No, I always liked not having TVs for the most part. But we did do some incredible World Cups where I would. You know, TVs are great when it's like there's actually, you know, an event. We had some amazing times down there for the World Cup. I remember back in, I think it was 2010, and the US played England. In the World Cup.
I remember Clint Dempsey scored a goal on one of the worst goalkeeping gaffes you've ever seen.
Yeah, yes. It was 1-1. Yep. That's the final score.
Yeah.
But you literally couldn't get anyone else in there. And there was me and one other person in there who are England fans. And we had a sea of USA. That was a great World Cup. And, you know, depending on who was playing, you'd have this whole new, you know, crew. I remember, I think it was... Yeah, Egypt or Algeria.
USA, Algeria.
And there was like tons of local taxi drivers had come in, and you had this whole crew of North Africans in the bar cheering their team on. And, you know,
the
Dutch were super fun when they came in. You know, we had some pretty cool Brazilian fans, and yeah, it was neat. That was definitely a highlight for me when we did that.
So I understand that things were already shifting, and then the pandemic hits, and you have to do what a lot of small businesses do, which is, first of all, you know, you shut down for a bit, then you wonder, how long do we have to stay shut down? What are the rules going to be? Will they be consistent? Can we operate in a way that allows us to even break even? If we can't, will we get support? What worked? What didn't? Let's start at least from the government side. There was PPP. Did that work?
Yeah. No, PPP has been a lifesaver for, I would say, every single restaurant out there. Yeah, the first round of PPP was a little clunky and they didn't really quite know the rules and they changed the rules. But still, it was a good thing. And the second round was much, you know, much more clear in terms of how to do that. And yeah, no, PPP has been...
It was a lifeline.
Yeah, it's been a great program. You know, there was another one that they did, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which was, you know, federal...
It was supposed to be a big pot of money, a restaurant revitalization fund, and it was supposed to be available to everybody, and it was sort of billed as this panacea for restaurants. What actually happened?
Yeah, so, you know, it was first come, first served. And, you know, by the time that had come out, you know, me and every other restaurant owner had, you know, applied for, you know, countless, you know, grants and PPP. And, you know, we were all, I think, pretty savvy at having that and had the stuff kind of lined up that they would want. And, yeah, it was first come, first served. So I know, you know, we got ours in, you know, 24 hours. And, yeah, we missed out, which, you know, which was a bummer. You know, I don't feel like we could have done it much different. But they funded one third of restaurants in the country with a lot of money. And so you've got two thirds who got nothing. And it just seems like very unfortunate that they didn't, you know, spread that pot around in a way that it would, you know, help more.
Why do you think it went the way it did? Why would they tout a program that two-thirds end up getting nothing out of?
You know, that's well above my pay grade.
Just sort of inefficiency, poor communication?
I don't understand why they did it that way. You know, they know how many restaurants are in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure, you know, the big restaurant chains with, you know, accounting firms had everything lined up at a touch of a button and off it went. And they're probably the ones that got the bulk of the money and perhaps need it the least, you know. And I'm just guessing on that. But yeah, I think that was really, you know, badly rolled out, honestly.
A listener named Jack wants to know, what do business owners think should have been done to ensure they had a fair shot to stay open?
The pandemic happens. It's still happening, right? You can't get too upset about that. You know, things happen, right? And, you know, I was fine with, you know, a lot of the restrictions, and it was just, you know, it was a necessary thing, and it was tough, and it created challenges and, you know, new ways of doing business. Or, I found the orange yellow zone thing, you know, beyond infuriating, where you could drive to Victor or Fairport.
That was a well-documented disaster.
On and on, right? Yeah, and, you know, and you could go in and have a meal, but then if you, you know, you come to Brighton and the city and other parts, you know, you can't. You know, that was a big swing and a miss, I think, there. But, yeah, you just got to hang in there and, you know, and innovate. You know, we tried a bunch of different stuff. You know, we did takeout. You know, we did, you know, fish and chip pop-ups when we were closed. You know, we tried to really do a lot of... you know, beer sales to go. We transitioned into, you know, online ordering, which is not something we'd done before. And, you know, you just got to kind of think on your feet and, you know, talk to, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to other business owners, you know, like, the heck are you doing? You know, what do you make of these new rules? You know, so it was a lot of conversation that, you know, that happened there, just trying to figure it out.
Right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, there's no great answer. It's just, you know, it's tough. It's a difficult time, and, you know, you just try and get through it as best you can.
Could you have, I guess, a couple of things before we move on from the pandemic, because let's move on from the pandemic in a second, because I want to talk to Jamie and Dan about community, because businesses are businesses, but not every business creates a community. We're going to talk about that in a moment. If the pandemic hadn't happened, do you think we'd be sitting here today talking about your closure?
No.
Okay. Do you think you could have done more to adapt or adapt differently?
No. And I say that because it's such a well-known, well-loved, established thing, right? That you can only change so much before it's no longer what people expect it to be.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And then what you're talking about now is a changing scene that was already, there was already change happening. Then the pandemic hits, you're on the sideline for a bit, bottom lines are crunched for everybody. Could the Tap and Mallet have gone on to be something? Could you have reinvented it pretty radically? And is it a case, Joe, where you're just thinking, that's not what I want to do?
Yeah, I don't have the heart for it, honestly. I created that space with my partner Casey, and it was a really sort of specialist beer bar, you know, pub thing, and I, you know, truly, truly loved it. And neither one of us wanted to completely retool it. You know, like it's beautiful as it is, and that location's amazing, and it's got a long history. It goes back to 1890. You know, it's been a biker bar, it's been a, you know, an Irish pub, it's, you know, it was the original McGregor's. I mean, you know that went on to have a big influence, and it's still around. And you know, it's going to be great for the next person that goes in there. And it's, you know, but
is that settled, by the way? That's not settled. What happens next, right?
No, it's still that chapter has yet to be decided. But it'll be great. It'll be great for the, you know, the right person. You know,
but you,
know,
you guys will sell it. Sell it, right?
That's, you know, that's a hope, to, you know, sell it to somebody that we're, you know, excited to have in there and is right for the neighborhood. And you know, I'm very strongly linked to that neighborhood and that space. And you know, it'll be something that makes sense in there. You know, there still are restaurants that are doing well, and you know, and they're a different concept. And you know, brew pubs are doing great. I mean, there's a lot of different things out there, but I loved what we did, and you know, we felt like we didn't want to completely like rip it up. And you know, it's now Tap and Mallet reimagined. You know.
And because you have a different place over in Brighton.
Yeah. So mid-pandemic, you know, I opened another restaurant, which wasn't, I was already doing that before the pandemic started.
Those plans were in process.
Yeah. We were 2 feet.
Because the pandemic's a great time to open.
Yeah, we were 2 feet in on that one. It's a place called the Sheffield Tavern, named after, you know, the town I largely grew up in the UK. And it's, you know, it's around the 12 Corners area in Brighton. It's, you know, it's a really cool neighborhood pub. You know, it's got great beers, it's got a back bar, it's a different, it's its own thing, right? And it's
not a recreation of Tap.
No, it's not. It's a pub in a neighborhood where there's no other pubs, which, you know, is one of the reasons we loved it. And you know, my kids all go to Brighton, so I do love that neighborhood. It's its own thing. And you know, that place is, you know, it's a baby, and it's growing nicely, and things are good and healthy, which, yeah, I'm pretty fortunate to, you know, I'm still in the business.
Jamie, I can't ask you and Dan to speak for the entire Rochester beer community, but let me just ask, from the conversations you're having, is there hope that that tap space gets filled by somebody who has a beer mission in mind of some kind in Rochester?
You know what? I have no idea.
That's not top of mind.
That's
right now?
Not top of mind. We went in last night. Dan and I went in last night, and there were about a lot of regulars, old regulars that showed up, people we haven't seen in a really long time, and really spending a lot of time in the space of what that particular location meant to us over the years and during different seasons of our lives and all of that. And as soon as the topic of what's next came up, people are like, nope. We're not talking about that. We want to maintain as much of this as we possibly can and really stay present in thinking about what we can still have as it's Tap and Mallet.
Yeah, I think there's something beautiful about that. And I'm sure Joe will see a lot more of the old regulars in the next month or so. Dan, do you think about the future of that space, and does anything come to mind for you?
I haven't really too much time to think about it. I think that speaking with, you know, regulars and, you know, friends that I made over the years there, as much as it is about the beer, like Joe stated at the top of the hour, like the community, the culture, that aspect is probably the conversation that's being had the most as far as keeping it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking to Dan Giroux, Jamie Barclay, Joe McBain. Joe's the co-owner, co-founder of Tap and Mallet, which will close when? End of the year, right? December 31st, is that right?
Yeah, December 31st. Go out with a big bang.
On New Year's. So are you going all the way to the ball drop, like 2 a.m. that night?
I'm sure we will, yeah.
Yeah, I got a feeling that's going to be a long night. They may see dawn the next day, and then that'll be it for the Tap and Mallet after 14 years in the South Wedge of Rochester. And you might have seen the news today, Unter Beer Garden on East Avenue, that's going to close on December 12th. And this is some of what we expected in the last year and a half as a result of the pandemic. So Let's take our only break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about what it means to actually build community and what Joe has been hearing from this community and maybe what the next weeks will be like as they close that chapter and maybe open new ones. We'll be right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, we sit down with Monroe County Executive Adam Bellow. There's a lot to talk about: the newly declared state of emergency in the county and what that means, the upcoming availability of rapid tests for county residents, and the proposed county budget. Adam Bellow for the hour, joining us Thursday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rochester has a really tremendous beer scene. And you heard Jamie and Dan say earlier this hour that a lot of that traces directly to Tap and Mallet, which will close at the end of this year. Tough news for the beer community in Rochester, who has appreciated and loved that space and grown together in that space. Jamie, what is your first memory at Tap?
So I was at a friend of mine's house in the South Wedge, and we get a phone call from Leslie. I think she was working that first night of Tap and Mallet, and say, y'all have to get down here. This place is crazy. I can't believe you're missing this. And we decided not to go. We did go the next day. We decided not to go that day.
Was this early days for Tap?
Oh, first opening day.
Oh, okay.
Oh, opening day. It was opening day, and Leslie was bartending and called on the old cell phone because you can't text then, and there's, you know, very little social media, and said, y'all need to get down here, as I mentioned. And we didn't go, but we went the next day, and I think I went just about every day from that second day forward. So my memories of Tap and Mallet are from that first day till now. Yeah, so...
Awesome stuff. And Dan came to Tap a little bit later. What's your first memory, Dan?
Well, first memory was the night I actually met Jamie, a former local radio host, mentioned something on Twitter, drinks and bad decisions. And my young self was trying to infiltrate the Rochester community world. And I said, yeah, I'm down. He told me to come out. It was apparently his birthday. So I crashed a birthday party via Twitter and met a number of community members that night, including Jamie, which then led to many more amazing times and memories at Tap.
Dan, how opened, this is, I think, this is not just sort of a frilly question. I think this is important because Joe brought up his desire to avoid the snobbery that sometimes the craft beer scene gets tagged with. How much of that, if any, did you experience, and how open was the community to you, Dan?
I think in the early days of trying to get into it, there was some, but I don't know if that was just my age. But as I took on more roles and more time at Tap, that snobbery disappeared. And, you know, that was definitely something that Joe ingrained in me as far as being as open and welcoming and just sort of meeting people at their level and speaking to people and getting them to where they want, sort of thing.
Jamie, do you agree with that, that this is was largely a successful 14 years at keeping snobbery out?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Joe is definitely not a snob, nor Casey, nor the folks that work there. Meeting people where they're at and not laughing when somebody orders a Bud Light at a beer bar, right? So all of those things, like, were absolutely something that you felt and you saw there. And there certainly are fair share of beer snobs in the Rochester beer community.
There's probably snobs in every beer community,
you know,
in every beer city.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just welcoming them too, right? Like, and making sure that there's the best beer possible and a great experience and all of that. So I think Tap was a place where people were welcome in disarming, right? And so if you want to feel important in beer, You know, you might be come off as a snob, right? But tap was someplace where everybody could come as equals, right?
Scott Benjamin from the Community Place says, Joe has been a great supporter of nonprofits in Rochester. Mm. We held several successful guest bartender events to benefit Community Place as recently as October. The staff was so helpful, even though it meant they were sharing tips with our agency. Tap and Mallet will be missed. And he says, P.S., I'm not a craft beer person, but they always had some local hard ciders on tap that were great. Ciders. Good ciders in the world.
Always, yeah, yeah. We've got some downtown now. There's Seed and Stone, the Rochester Urban Cidery. Yeah, there's plenty.
I have to get up to speed on the scene there.
I've got to mention my buddy Elise at OSB. You know, yeah, there's a lot of good cider. I mean, we are in New York. We can't forget about the apples.
Oh my gosh, that is so true. And it's been a few years, but we've talked cider on this program. I hesitate to use this word, but I hope it's clear what I mean. There's serious cider being made, and that means different things. I mean, it could be sparkling, could be sweeter, it could be more dry. But there's some really, really good stuff on the scene. So,
Are people
open to it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We carry a wide range of ciders at, you know, all times. I mean, I remember Blackbird Cider, mm-hmm. you know, they're doing great. Scott and his wife, Margaret, used to come in back in my Alto days and we'd drink cider together. And then he'd bring in stuff that he made at home. And then he came in one day and he said, I bought an orchard and more samples would come. We talk about, I always thought they were a bit dry in the early days. But and then he says, I quit my job and I'm doing it. And he's been doing great ever since. Mm. So that all started at the Alto Bar.
John says, thanks to Joe for a great run at Tap and Mallet. Still remember seeing Jeff Dale from Three Heads run around as Santa one night. Best at Sheffield's and long live Liverpool. That's from John.
Never walk alone.
Thank you, John. I know when you open any business, you open the business with the intent of keeping afloat, making money, hopefully, having a good bottom line. How do you build a community, Joe?
You create a space that's it's warm, it's welcoming, it's loved. You've got the nice beer, you've got the good food, and you know, I deep down, like, I love pubs. I love pub culture. I'm not a religious person, so like that kind of, you know, that fills a kind of gathering social thing for me, and a lot of people are like that.
Well, what is a pub? Is pub different than a bar?
You know, when you say pub to me, it's something that is it's a more, you know, warm, welcoming thing than a bar. You know, if you say bar, I'm kind of thinking like, you know, shots, and there's maybe like a quick draw machine down at the end, and there's a, you know, electronic dartboard in the corner. I don't know. It sounds a bit more of a kind of like standard kind of cookie cutter thing. You know, I grew up in pubs in England, and it was like a neighborhood community meeting space where, you know, you get beer and maybe some food and you knew people, you know, and you'd meet people, and that's one of the big reasons why we didn't have televisions, mm-hmm. Like people can talk, you know, the beer is a social lubricant, it's an icebreaker, you know.
And I hate to ask this because I don't want to be get off my lawn guy, but you opened in 2007, same year that the first iPhone comes out. So it probably took a little bit before everybody in a bar was on their phone all the time. Do you see people a little bit more separated, or do you think people go to bars not to be on their phones, but to be present and in person?
Oh, both. I mean, we're all addicted to our phones more than we should be. But, you know, you can design things. So I don't know if you guys have ever been to Swan Market, but, you know, it's an amazing little German place down in Parcells. And you're forced to sit next to people on these big long tables because that's just how it's set up. And I've had so many amazing lunches and met so many amazing people just by this kind of like forced socialization, if you will. And it's great. So when we, you know, redesigned the bar room years back, you know, we put in these great big long tables. And so you create spaces where people mix with other people, and you know, and you just get a lot of, you know, a lot of chat and interaction. The same thing at the bar. Most of that bar is angled kind of inward, so there's a lot of areas where, you know, it sets up well to talk, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Jamie, what's the difference between a pub and a bar in your eyes, Jamie?
So I love Joe's example about it being that community. It's similar to a church or something like that, because a pub is where you go to both meet people, you go there to recharge, you go there to cry, to laugh, to, you know, do any of those things. And a bar feels like maybe I'm in an airport, or it's just a space. A bar, I don't look to do the same things that a pub does. And which is really interesting, because now I'm reflecting on it, because the brewery culture is very similar to a pub culture. If we think about what you get from the pub culture, right, and what I just mentioned, you do get that in many tap rooms, many good brewery tap rooms. So it's just that space for really building that community and going there, again, to your Cheers point, like good, bad, or indifferent. It's a place where you're known and you can connect.
Dan, when you've worked at TAP, how many people in any given night, like what's the breakdown of people that you already know or at least recognize and people who are new?
So, I mean, it's weird being in my second era there. Back 6-7 years ago, there was a lot of the high regulars that were coming in. And now I definitely still have people from 6-7 years ago that I'm like, oh, like, it's good to see you again. Like, let's chat. And even, you know, new regulars who come in Friday lunch and hang out, do their work, you know, have a beer, eat some lunch, chat about the week, chat about their what their kids are doing and whatnot. So yeah, there's a lot of regular people coming in, still that sense of community, and, you know, just trying to keep that going, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, speaking of keeping something going, Joe co-founded, as we mentioned, Rochester's annual Beer Week, curated the showcase Rochester Real Beer Expo. What are the odds that those continue, Joe?
Well, I think Beer Week has kind of naturally died a death some years ago.
But that won't come back, you don't think?
The week? No, I don't think so. And that's like not a pandemic thing. That
yeah.
kind of like
yeah, that was
naturally stopped.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But the Expo, 2020 would have been the 10th Beer Expo on Gregory Street there. And, you know, that didn't happen. And it didn't happen this year either. So that's not actually a Tap and Mallet event. That's something where, you know, I work with the Neighborhood Association Baswa, and you know, years back now, we came up with the idea of doing it, and I was like, well, I'd love to do that, and this is how I would do the beer. So I've curated the beer there, and I see no reason why the expo won't continue on forevermore. And I'd be open to continuing to, you know, do the beer for that. And it's been, all the money from that goes to the South Wedge Neighborhood Association. It's been a fundraiser for years, and it's been super successful and really popular. And I'd love to see that keep going.
Let me read a couple more emails. Different John wants to know, how come the city of Rochester didn't step in and prevent this from happening? Okay, Joe, did the city of Rochester, every city government wants successful businesses. Did they have any impact, influence? Could they have helped?
You know, the county did some grants, you know.
The county, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure the city of Rochester is in a position to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they could have done, right?
Yeah.
In this particular case. And the grants you're talking about came, I think, through the CARES Act, and Monroe County had the chance to distribute some grants to small businesses to essentially be sort of lifeline grants throughout the pandemic. So. Mm-hmm. So you were on that list at least. So there was some.
Yeah,
kind of
we got a little bit of money from that, and I can remember at the time, it came at a pretty crucial little time.
Last
there.
Winter, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And we'd been closed at that point. We closed around just before Thanksgiving, and we didn't reopen until February. We did some pop-up stuff here and there, but really just kind of keep ourselves entertained as much as anything.
Jim in Geneva says, I read the news today, oh boy, about the premier and remarkable Tap and Mallet closure, a regular Rochester pre-concert for Springsteen, Wilco, John Hyatt, Jazz Fest, and other big city events. It's a quality refreshment stop that we outer region folks would look forward to visiting as much as the ticketed events themselves. So sorry to hear this. Many, many fond memories of the standard bearing ale and food outlet and the great, engaging, and fun staff working the taps. Again, that's Jim in Geneva. How much are you hearing from people who maybe you haven't seen in a few years, but are, as Dan mentioned, coming back in or, you know, kind of maybe paying respects for what you've done?
Well, yesterday was the first day since we made the announcement. Yeah, it was busy, lively crowd down there. You know, social media has been buzzing with people, you know, reaching out and, you know, disappointed at the news. So it's meant a lot of things to a lot of people, and everybody's got their own experiences, you know, from there. So, you know, we'll definitely see a lot of people that we've, you know, seen many times over the years will pop in for...
Just take the whole studio apart, man.
Ripping it apart, man.
It's all breaking down here. No, I mean, I'm sure you will, and Dan mentioned, Jamie, do you expect when you're in there over the next month or so to keep seeing sort of old faces that became friends at TAP?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Absolutely. I'm kind of wondering when I'm going to see you there, Evan.
Oh, I'll get there.
I know I met you at Love & Cup, but, you know.
I did meet you at Love & Cup.
I think we've had one or two beers at TAP and Mallet over the years. So I expect to see you there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the place has been fabulous, and it's been nothing but, you know, good memories, you know, for me and, you know, countless other people. And this last month is going to be a pretty cool month, I think, you know.
Do you get emotional? You have some emotion in the next.
Yeah, I do, but you know, it's a bit different for me because, you know, I didn't wake up on Monday morning and call Casey and be like, "Hey, you know, let's, you know, this is something that we've talked about at length for, it's a big decision."
Sure,
you know?
But it's real now.
Yeah, so you know, we didn't announce it until, you know, we told all the staff. You know, we wanted to tell the staff before we, you know, made an announcement and, you know, give those guys a month, you know, to figure out what they're doing. Fortunately, the job market's, you know, really pretty good right now, but, and I know I wanted it, but it is good for them. So they've got a month, and once we made that announcement, I posted it on social media, and then you were like, wow, you know, like, yeah, it's happening. You know, I remember driving into the meeting on Monday and just being like,
not fun. Producer Megan Mack and I devised the greatest podcast that never happened when we were at Tap and Mallet one time, and maybe that'll have to be revived at some point. No, I'm sure there've been a lot of great stories. Everybody's got stories from Tap over the years. Patrick says, the Tap and Mallet is gone, but the Sheffield is open. Is this just about the beer, or is it about moving into a more established demographic of customers? They took over the old Otter Lodge during the pandemic for Sheffield. We should also recognize TAP took over McGregor's. So are they really closing as a restaurant group? This leaves a recognizable gap between TAP and Mallet to the Lux Lounge. I'm still thinking there must be more to this story. I don't think there's more to the story. Is there more to the story, Joe?
No, there isn't. You know, the Sheffield is it's very much its own thing. And, you know, the two are only related in terms of me and Casey both own those. The Tap is its own thing, and it's a bummer, but you know, I'm going to try and, you know, not be too bummed out and think back on, you know, what an amazing thing it's been.
Yeah, and to address a listener who kind of tangled with me this morning on Twitter, I would just say, not every business closure is a sign of a business failure. Mm. Many are, but when you are forced to close, not because the beer you sell sucks or, you know, you're abusive to your customers, when you're forced to close, and then when you reopen, you have to have limits on how many clients you can have in a building, you may not get to the other side of that. That's been the dilemma for the federal government for the last 2 years, is figuring out, what do we do about this? And that's part of what we're looking at here. The Kimmels write to say, it was so hard to tell my kids Tap and Mallet is closing. I think that this is the difference between a pub and a bar. Mm-hmm. Kids and grandparents are welcome. Mm-hmm. We are so grateful for the many, many family date nights. Your staff has been like family to us. Thank you for everything you've done for our neighborhood. That's the Kimmels.
I like that. That summed it up nicely.
That's got to be very gratifying to hear.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
What single beer have you sold the most of in 14 years?
IPAs.
Well, I could have said IPAs. What IPA?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
No.
There's not
idea.
Like one beer?
No.
No?
No, because... Because
I know you rotate a lot.
Constantly. But you know what? I'll tell you this, right? I've never operated or owned a bar that didn't have Duval and Sam Smith's Oatmeal Stout. How's that?
Okay. I mean, I'd never order it. But, but you know, you got weird people in this world.
Yeah, yeah.
No, your IPAs are beautiful. Dan, 30 seconds. What's your favorite memory at Tap?
Off the top of my head, I think the Christmas parties over the years where it was a time for the family, the community to get together and, you know, hang out, let loose in an off night sort of thing. And, you know, it was truly magical.
I mean, I thought you were going to say meeting this beautiful woman in the studio here, but you do you. You pick whatever you want. Much love, Dan. That's actually a great story, and I love places that have communities. Obagolo's used to be like that. The late John Vito, they had Christmas parties. I loved that stuff. 30 seconds, Jamie. Favorite memory at Tap?
Probably when I moved away, when I moved to New York. The first place I would always come when I came back to Rochester is I would go directly to Tap and Mallet. Dan was still working there at the time in that first year, and I would walk in and I would feel instantly at home. So in feeling lonely and going to a new big city that I didn't know anybody, and to be able to come right back to Tap and feel instantly at home, it was a memory that I'll always cherish.
For all the businesses that have struggled through this pandemic, you know, we hope that these aren't the first ripples of a trend. With Unter closing December 12th, Tap at the end of this year, but we'll chronicle it. And much love to everyone who's just trying to get to the other side of this thing and keep those communities. And Joe, for the community you built, I know there's so much love and appreciation. Thanks for what you've done, and you're still at the Chef, so they'll see you there.
I'm still kicking around, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
That's Joe McBain, co-owner, co-founder of Tap and Mallet. Jamie, thanks for being here and telling your stories.
Thank you for having me.
Dan Giroux, great talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Evan.
And from the whole team here, Megan Mack producing and engineering today. Emma Ray Stein, Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported Public Radio.